Today we are finishing our series called Under Construction, where we've walked through the analogy of building a house and how it's like building strong faith. Last week we discussed how in building a house and building your faith, you are going to go through hard things. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of what. But if you want to get to the other end, you must persevere through those challenges. To get a house finished, there are going to be things that go wrong, and you're going to want to quit and say, builder, you take this house. But you got to just push through it. In your faith, there are going to be moments where Satan is trying to tempt you to say, you know what, is this thing real? I can't believe this happened to me. Maybe I should walk away from this. Maybe I can do Jesus from afar, and I don't need a church family. There's all these temptations. But to get to the end, to get the reward of the house, to get the reward of the strong faith, we must persevere. And today we're going to look at the final step. What you do after you move into a house. You've got the building. You don't just move your stuff in. Well, maybe some people do this. And then close all the drapes and lock the doors and just sit inside like, oh, I love my beautiful lair. This is so wonderful for me. No, if you've got a house, you want to have people over. You have the big housewarming party. And you say, come on over. Let's celebrate this gift that I've got. And hopefully you see this blessing that God has given to you as a way that you can use the house to be a blessing to others, a way that you can extend the blessing beyond yourself. When Michelle and I were designing our house, our kids had already grown, graduated, and moved out of the house, but we still built a 3-bedroom house. Why did we do that? Because we've always known in our hearts that if somebody needs a room, we want to be available. Lo and behold, as many of you know, a year and a half later, a 16-year-old boy moved into our house for 2 years. Wasn't in the plan, it wasn't always easy, but it was our way of practicing this principle we're talking about today of hospitality, of extending the blessing beyond what we have, but saying, you know what, friend or stranger, welcome. I want to help you where you need help. And so here's where this analogy really comes together, is that a life of faith isn't just for ourselves to pat ourselves on the back and say, man, Ryan, you have arrived. Your faith is so great. Your connection with Jesus so deep. It's so that you can help other people on their journey, so that all the blessings and the love that you receive from God can overflow into others' lives, so that you can show them kindness and meet their needs. When we talk about inviting guests to join us in our lives, maybe in our homes, maybe saying, hey, I haven't met you before. I'm Ryan. I'd love to have you come sit with me in church here. Like, these are all tangible ways of being hospitable and being welcoming. And when we do these things, we're living out the Greek behind the word hospitality. It's philoxenia. So Philadelphia is a city of brotherly love. Philo is love. Xenia, if you're a xenophobe, you hate strangers or you're afraid of strangers. So it's a love of strangers is the actual root word that we translate as hospitality. It's saying that I'm going to extend welcome and love even to people that I have no idea who they are. And that's what our life of faith is calling us to do. It's to extend that hospitality, that love, and that welcome even to strangers. But in America, we have a very different vibe for what hospitality is, right? In America, hospitality is maybe inviting somebody over to a restaurant after church, or having somebody over who's already a friend and saying, hey, come on over for dinner and let's play games afterwards. It might be that you think, okay, I will, it's the hospitality industry. We do it often outside of our home, right? It's the restaurant outside of our home. Or when family comes in to visit saying, hey, why don't you get a hotel room? Motel 6 will leave the light on for you. And we're like, see, we've got hospitality there. Or for some people, they're thinking more in the Martha Stewart range of hospitality. I can't have anybody over to my house unless it is showroom clean, picked up, beautiful flower arrangement in the center. The dinner is going to be perfect. We're going to use charger plates. Guys, those are the plastic decorative plates you put under the real plate to make it look pretty. Like people think, well, that's what hospitality is. And so we make a big deal of going these different directions of letting, you know, businesses run the hospitality, or we make it so stressed out in our own lives that we don't want to do it. But none of that really shows us what biblical hospitality is supposed to look like. So when we look at what does the Bible actually tell us about hospitality, what we find is surprisingly little. It just tells us, like Nike, just do it. So in Romans chapter 12, verse 13, it's a two-word sentence, practice hospitality. In Titus 1:8, it says an overseer must be hospitable, but it never describes it. In 1 Peter 4:9, it says offer hospitality to one another without grumbling. So if you do it, you don't get to complain about how much work it was to set your house up before they came over. So as Christians, if you're reading through the Bible, there's really no question about whether we're supposed to be hospitable people. That's clear. The question is, what does it actually look like for us? In our American culture in 2026, how do we live out this biblical principle of hospitality? And so what we can do is we can look at different patterns we observe in stories in the Bible of what hospitality has looked like in their Near Eastern culture. And we can tease out a little bit of how we can then practice hospitality. The first place I want to look at is in Genesis chapter 18. We've got Abraham. And Abraham is, this is before there are the people of Israel. This is before we have Jews. This is before God has given the law and told people how they're supposed to live. We have the man who is the father of all of Israel. God's made a promise that he's going to be the father of a great nation. And then for years, nothing happens. But then we get this story in chapter 18 of Genesis, verse 2. It says, Abraham looked up and saw three men standing nearby. When he saw them, he hurried from the entrance of his tent to meet them and bowed low to the ground. He said, if I have found favor in your eyes, my Lord, do not pass by your servant, or do not pass your servant by. Let a little water be brought, and then you may all wash your feet and rest under this tree. Let me get you something to eat so you can be refreshed, and then go on your way now that you have come to your servant. Look at how he bends over backwards. He's so humble. He's calling him my servant. He's getting them water. He's washing their feet. He's getting them food to refresh them. And he doesn't even know what verse 1 of the chapter tells us. And that is that it is actually the Lord God appearing to him. But in this short story, what we see is that he's willing to just do all these things to roll out the welcome mat for these guests. And I could go on and show you how Rebecca, his daughter-in-law, showed similar hospitality when Abraham sent his servant to go find his son a wife in Genesis chapter 24. Or how in the Torah, in the book of Deuteronomy, the law for the Jews, it requires that people must provide for foreigners and strangers who are traveling through their land. Looking at the New Testament, what we see, Jesus didn't have a house. He didn't have a home. For 3 years, he did ministry, sleeping on other people's couches, his disciples as well. And then we get to Paul and the early church that is going all over the Roman Empire and around the Mediterranean Sea. They're not staying at hotels. They're finding other Christians in the city, and they're staying with them. And so a huge part of why the command is that we must be hospitable is because this is how Christianity is starting to spread. It's through the kindness and the welcome and the care that Christians are showing through these traveling missionaries. It's a beautiful thing that is what allowed Christianity to spread and to grow through the land. So from these examples and others, there are some biblical patterns for hospitality that begin to emerge. The first is hospitality is both for friend and stranger. I think we understand, yeah, when your family says they're coming to visit, you say, hey, I'd love to put you up in my house. Come stay with me. We'll do dinner. We'll make you breakfast. That's hospitality for families, for friends. But that's not the picture necessarily or excluded to that that we see in Scripture. It also includes stranger. Just like we saw, Abraham had no idea who these three strangers were, and yet he humbly served them. And in fact, that story is so well known that it's referred to in Hebrews chapter 13, one of the books at the very end of the Bible, years after Jesus. In Hebrews 13, verse 1 and 2, it says, keep on loving one another, love for one another, as brothers and sisters. Do not forget to show hospitality. That's love for stranger. Do not forget to show hospitality to strangers, for by so doing, some people have shown hospitality to angels without knowing it. I think that's a callback to Genesis 18. They're saying, look, our forefather Abraham showed hospitality to these men. They were angels. He didn't even know it. You should do the same. Love one another and have this love for stranger. Additionally, while Jesus was at a party being hosted by a Pharisee, he tells them in Luke chapter 14, when you give a luncheon or dinner, do not invite your friends, your brothers or sisters, your relatives or your rich neighbors. If you do, they may invite you back and so you will be repaid. But when you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed. Now, I don't think Jesus is saying never have your family and friends over. I think he's making a strong point. Don't neglect the outsiders. Don't allow there to be a forgotten minority within your church who never, ever received the invite. Don't allow there to be that person who's like, you know, I see people smiling and talking in the foyer, but nobody ever talks to me. We can't allow that, friend or stranger. I like to call stranger just a not yet friend. But if you invest in them, they can become a friend. And that's what we're called to do. And this is a nice little teaching, and we hear what Jesus is saying, and maybe we think, yeah, that's wonderful, but the question we really have to ask ourselves is, are we doing that? In the last year, have you shared a meal with anybody who you knew would never be able to repay you or invite you back over to their house? And I know that that's probably a little bit of guilt for some of us when we hear that, me included, but how much could we change things if, as a congregation, we said, you know what? Let's fix that. Let's make sure that the forgotten are forgotten no more, that the outsiders are no longer left on the outside, but friend and stranger are both invited and a part of this welcome into our home. So our first lesson about hospitality, it's not just limited to who you know, but it's extended to all those that are part of the family of faith and beyond. And that leads us to the next point. It's both Christians and non-Christians. Some people try to parse out this teaching on hospitality and say, well, it's just for Christians. And they point to the one another aspect of Hebrews, keep on loving one another. And so, well, Ryan, that's just for Christians. But when Jesus gives that teaching in Luke 14, he's not saying anything about if they're a follower of his or not. When we see what Abraham did, he wasn't asking those strangers, so do you worship the same God that I do? That wasn't any part of this hospitality. Whether they're a Christian or not, you don't know if they're a stranger. Here's what you need to understand. Our hospitality is based on our spiritual condition, not theirs. You don't wait to find out if they're a Christian before you extend the offer to say, hey, can I help? Can I provide a meal? Do you need a place to stay? If that may be the case, you extend the hospitality because you're a follower of Jesus. Because you know what it means to be a Christian means to lavishly shower love on others. Because while you were still a stranger separated from God, God sent his son Jesus to die for you, and he adopted every one of us into his family. He welcomes us into his home. He did all that before we were a Christian. And so we need to show that hospitality even to those who maybe aren't yet. Third point is that hospitality is activity and affection we see. Showing welcome to others is more than just what we do for them. Yes, you can say, hey, why don't you come to lunch? I know you're new, blah, blah, blah. But if you also invite your friends and you ignore the one person that you invited and you don't really talk to them, they're going to recognize that while you're doing the activity of hospitality, you are failing at the affection. They're going to feel that you're not really interested in including them. This is why in 1 Peter 4 it said, without grumbling, because your emotions behind it will be felt and will be seen. At my last church, we did a community outreach event. And we had tables of cookies for the community to come and take. And we had a lady behind the cookie table. And she had a rule, one cookie per. We literally watched her slap a child's hand and say, one cookie. Let's just be real honest. Is that kid saying, Mom, I want to go to that church on Wednesday night because the mean lady's only going to give me one cookie and hit me if I don't? Like, we've got to understand. She can say, well, I went to the event and I served cookies. You did, but your affection was all wrong. There was no welcome and there was no hospitality there. You get my point? All right. And finally, when we talk about the biblical pattern of hospitality, it's that we have to understand at times we are the host and at other times we are the guest. As you've been listening to this message, you've probably been listening through the ears of, yes, I want to be a person who is welcoming to others, who invites others in. When I see a stranger in church, I say, hey, come sit with me. All these things. But there are other times in your life when you need to receive hospitality from people. You're going through a tough time and you need to receive a meal. You need to receive the invite that says, just come on over and hang out with me. But in our self-reliance, we don't receive that very well. We like to say, well, I can be the host, but I'm not taking anybody else's pity. And we push people back. We hold them at arm's length. And we have to understand, at times, allow other people to practice hospitality towards you. Don't feel so proud if somebody invites you to a meal and they pick up the tab for you. And don't fight them on it. Say thank you. Or if you're sick or things are going on at home and people offer to bring you a meal, you need not be like, no, we don't need it. We've got it. Allow them to do this practice of hospitality that as Christians, we are all encouraged to do together. But for somebody to be hospitable, somebody else has to be willing to receive it. Okay? So don't be too proud if you're in one of those situations where that welcome, that love of a friend is coming towards you by your church family. So while researching for this message, I was looking at, well, what does it mean to be a good host? If we want to practice hospitality and do it well, how do we do that? And there's a famous church leader named Ed Stetzer who wrote about the difference between entertaining others and being hospitable. And it's really a blueprint for being a great host. And as I went through the list, I realized Jesus, unsurprisingly, fits every one of these points of what it means to be a great host. And so the first point that he lays out is that your job as a host is to bless, not impress. I kind of touched on this in the introduction. Your job is to simply meet people where they are and not worry about impressing them. Jesus frequently went places, met with people. He wasn't trying to be the center of the show, but he was trying to leave a blessing everywhere he went. The wedding in Cana, they run out of wine. This is bad news for the host of the party, that there's no wine. Jesus doesn't want to make a big deal of it. He doesn't want to get involved. His mom tells him he needs to, and like a good son, he listens to mom. He turns the water into wine, but we never hear him saying, look at me, guys, I just kept the party going. No, his focus was to be a blessing to the people who were celebrating there, not to draw attention to himself. He wasn't trying to impress anybody. Hospitality is simply blessing without focusing on impressing. You don't have to do this Martha Stewart beautiful living spread when people come over. They want your presence more. Next, That leads to savor, not stress. In Luke chapter 10, we see Jesus is spending time with his disciples, and there's two sisters, Mary and Martha. And wouldn't you know it, Martha's the one to stress. She's worried about getting all the food ready. She's worried about taking care of everybody that's in her house. She's frustrated that her sister Mary is kneeling in front of Jesus and soaking it all in. She says, Jesus, get my sister up and help me in the kitchen. Martha's focusing on getting it all right, and she's stressing. Mary is savoring time with her Savior. Good hospitality. If you're a good host, you're not worried about perfection. You're not stressing about it. You're in the moment. You're present. You're savoring that time with that person. The way you do that is you listen more than you babble. Okay? Jesus told a lot of parables, and he taught about the kingdom of heaven often, but we also see he was an incredible question asker. He was not about monologue and just telling people everything. He wanted dialogue. He would ask questions that went to their heart and get the conversation going. If you are entertaining people, if you are meeting with people, if you're trying to show welcome to friend, stranger, Christian, or non-Christian, and you find yourself doing all the talking, shut up. Ask a question. Show that you care what they think, what they're going through, how their life is. Make sure that the talking is back and forth. Listen, not babble. And finally, include, not exclude. In a world where men were everything that mattered in Jesus' world, he could have kept everything to just the male disciples. But what we see is he was including Martha and Mary. He invited the children to come to him. He touched the lepers, and he spoke with the lame beggars. All the people who would have been excluded, who would have been ignored, that he could have easily walked right past and nobody would have thought about. He met them where they were at. He loved them. He showed a kindness and a welcome to strangers wherever he encountered them. Yes, he connected most deeply with his friends, the disciples, but he was also an includer of all the outsiders around. In the most clear example we have of Jesus hosting others, it was actually the night of his betrayal, what we participated in communion. He followed what Abraham, the model Abraham had set, 4,000 years earlier, when the disciples came in, he washed their feet. He served them a meal. He filled their cup. He entertained. He connected with them. He made them a part of what he was doing there. He set a beautiful example for us in what he did in his last days. And that's what the heart of hospitality is. It's what Jesus did in that moment. It's making room for others. Making physical room for them in your home, perhaps a place to spend the night for a day or a week or a little longer. Maybe you know somebody who's going through a really rough life transition and they don't have a place to go. Do you have a bedroom? Are you willing to put them up? Are you willing to do foster care? It's a way to say, you know what, I'm going to do hospitality and welcome. Yes, it looks a little different than the New Testament, but it's taking this principle and this pattern and extending it to what the world looks like today and what lies in front of us. Maybe it's making room for them to join you at your dinner table or in your pew at the church. We've got our people who serve hospitality. They make all the food every single Sunday. It's a rotation of 8 people. If you'd like to help do that, please let me know. It's a lot of work. It's hard to make all that food and keep the coffee going and come in with orange juice and milk and all these things. But you guys realize that so many visitors come and they're like, this church just feels so welcoming. Yeah, we're trying to visibly and tangibly show just through a table of snacks and coffee and juice, we're glad you're here. We want to connect with you. So we can connect at the table or in the pew at church to welcome somebody and say, hey, I know you're new. You want to sit with me? Hey, let's, you know, to talk. Where are you from? What brought you here? Look for them the next week. Hey, you came back. I'm so glad. Like, that creates an atmosphere and a feeling where people are like, that church is so welcoming. Guess what? We worship a God who is so welcoming. We should reflect that with how we live and how we extend welcome to others. Maybe it's making room for people in your calendar. If you have no margin in your life, in your schedule, then you're not going to have time to ever be hospitable. In order to do that, in order to welcome, in order to share a meal or share your home, you've got to have some time in your life. Or maybe it's making room for them in your heart and moving them from stranger to friend and saying, you know what, I want to invest in this person, truly get to know this person. Even though they're different, even though, you know, I don't naturally connect, I'm going to try to connect with this person because I know they need to feel loved, cared for, friend of stranger. Yes, it is costly. There are times that you're going to feel too tired or too busy, too stretched to keep up with the friendships that you already have. I've been there, you've been there. And I'm not asking you to become somebody that you're not. So if you're an introvert, I know you're not going to walk out of here naturally be an extrovert and be like, I'm inviting everybody to my house for a picnic. Like, that's unrealistic. But hospitality doesn't ask you to become a different person. It asks you to simply make space for somebody else to come into your life when they are having a moment of need. And the reason that God's concerned we make room is because he's gone so far to make room for us. Jesus told his disciples before he died on the cross in John 14, verse 2, he said, my Father's house has many rooms. If that were not so, would I have told you that I'm going there to prepare a place for you? And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come back and take you to be with me, that you also may be where I am. Jesus didn't just leave the light on. He went ahead of us to get the room ready. God's affection for us is so great that he sent Jesus to die on the cross so that strangers and sinners like us would have a place to spend eternity. So today, I hope that you see hospitality is more than sharing a meal. It truly is sharing a life. It's opening up your time, your heart, your home to friends and stranger. 5 weeks ago, we started this series with a blueprint. We counted the cost. We picked up the tools to build. We let others inspect the work. And we learned that we have to keep going when things go wrong. And today we're finally moving into the house. We finally have this faith built up. But when you build a house for yourself, the finished house isn't meant to be a trophy. It's an address. It's a place with a door and a table and a light where somebody who has nowhere else to go can be received. Michelle and I designed a spare room before we ever knew who was going to move into it. And today now, we all walk around this world like Abraham. The Bible calls us strangers in a strange land. And we're called to show love for strangers, to show welcome, to invite people to God's banquet table. Jesus tells us, I'm going to prepare a place for you. In Revelation, we're told there's this incredible wedding supper of the Lamb. We're all invited. God has opened the door for us to walk through and join him. And the reason that we're called to practice this incredibly kind and generous hospitality and welcome is to tell others, the door is open. Come on in. The Father's house has many rooms, and it's waiting for everyone that we know. Would you bow your heads with me as we pray?